Tom Weber on NPR News. I'm joined now by comedian, actor, and Emmy Award winner Louis Anderson, and a Twin Cities native, let's not forget. Last year, Anderson won the Emmy for supporting actor in a comedy series for playing the role of Christine Baskets in the TV show Baskets. Christine is the mother of a rodeo clown played by Zach Galifianakis. This spring, the show was renewed for a third season. Anderson's bread and butter, though, is still stand-up comedy. He's back in Minnesota a lot to do shows and other events, and he has four shows this week, one on Thursday at Turtles in Shakopee. The other three are Friday and Saturday at the Maple Grove Tavern. Louis Anderson, thanks for being here.
Hey, Tom, how are you?
Congrats on the Emmy.
Thank you. I'm actually a St. Paulite.
Yeah, I'm
just
sorry.
So you know, Minneapolis, it gets a lot of stuff.
That Twin Cities stuff, right?
Yeah, I'm over in St. Paul right now, and I'm really thrilled with how nice the downtown looks. I hope that we can bring St. Paul back to the glory that it deserves.
Yeah,
that's what I really would like. I mean, you get older in life, and you realize what's important.
That's right. And you grew up on the east side.
I grew up on the east side right there at the Roosevelt Projects. The Roosevelt Homes, I think they were called. There wasn't a name Projects then, I don't think.
Yeah.
I think it was right about the same time.
Yeah.
They started calling them housing projects, which then they just dropped the housing and went with projects, and it became like a four-letter word.
Right.
You know, it's a lot of – there was a lot of like – you know, the kids, we line up for school, and there'd be the project line, and then the, you know, rich kids.
Hmm.
You know, and then
after school, you mean going home.
Yeah, going home. So, yeah. You know, you had that stigma.
Hmm.
All the kids had the same coats in the project line because the welfare gave out certain vouchers to certain stores. Robert Hall, we used to come down here to Robert Hall in St. Paul and have a $40 voucher because, you know, the government doesn't trust poor people with cash.
And then there was the, you know, it used to be that you had a different color ticket if you got a free lunch, too, at school. I don't know if you were a part of that.
I don't know if we had tickets back then. I think they gave them the same, I think we had the same color. I don't think it was a different color ticket.
Okay.
But, you know, the whole thing, if you were in a, you know, people probably knew you got free tickets. But, you know, I mean, I think you get over that when you're a hungry kid and you're just.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think you can live with that day to day, but I think it's there. It's always a part of it.
And it was a town home that housed 13. I mean, to what extent was it a home that housed 13
well,
people?
I mean, it was, you know, I think we were like the second, third family that moved in. Mm-hmm. So it was brand new.
Okay.
And it was certainly a step up for us. It was a brand new, like, apartment. Four bedrooms, 2.5 or 1.5 baths. I think there might have been two and a half baths. I'm not really sure how many. I think probably 1.5 bath, but
yeah.
And then a basement and a yard, excuse me. So I look at it fondly in so many ways because it was our home. It was a strong structure and, you know, it was all stucco and cement. And
mm-hmm.
it was a cool place because we had probably lived. I was born there, so I had never lived anywhere else. So I lived right there in Hazelwood.
So where did everyone sleep?
Oh,
four
you know,
bedrooms, 13
I guess,
people.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you have a 20-year lifespan in between the first and the, you know, the first kid and the last kid.
That's true.
So some people are gone.
Right.
You know, they're in, you know, the army or they're married already. You know, my sisters might have been married and my, you know, all different stages of their lives. But... you know, people ask me, you know, what was it like growing up in a big family? And you just, I don't know, you have to carve out your stuff.
Yeah.
And me and my brother Tommy were the youngest. I was 10th.
He was 11.
He was 11th.
And so it was more like just growing up in some ways with the one sibling because you, the
yeah,
two you
no,
were
no, I think, no, and two sisters, she, you know, Sheila and Lisa, they were the next ages that were closer. Mm-hmm. So it was more us four.
Yeah.
And then everybody else drifted in and out. You know what I mean? So it was a big family, but you know what I mean. It wasn't 11 at once, always, that I can remember, too.
Sure. I have a
brother.
Like,
it wasn't a thunderous herd, you know what I mean?
I have a brother who's 6 years older, and there's differences, but I can't imagine a 20-year-old or than me brother.
Well, more parental, probably more authoritarian, you know, when you have an older brother like that. Hopefully a role model. You know, that's what you look for.
Well, I'm glad you're here, Louis Anderson, here doing some shows this week. And you come back a lot, too. 1-800-242-2828 if you have a question. Maybe you've seen Louis do his show as well. Or you've seen the show, Baskets, which we're going to talk about. And I don't know that people realize this a lot, how many nights people like Louis Anderson or Jerry Seinfeld or Jay Leno, even though they have success in someplace else, like a TV show, they're still out there hitting the ground doing stand-up most many nights.
Yeah, you know, this is my 40th year from starting right over here in North Minneapolis at Mickey Finn's with Jeff Gerbino and Scott Hansen and Alex Cole and Bill Bauer, God rest his soul, and Dan, all of them, Gary, and I'm going to get people wrong. Jeff Cesario was over there, and Liz Winstead. You know, we had everybody, you know, Joel Hodgson. You know, this was a, this is Minneapolis has a rich comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And that little club over there spurred a lot of wonderful things. And most of the comics are still working, so.
Yeah. Does the act, does your act change in any way because you've seen success in another venue, say, a.k.a. television?
Well, that's a really good question. I mean, you see it in the audience because there's people coming here for a different reason.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I've always had a diverse audience because I had Life with Louis and my books.
Yeah, with children's genre, too. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So kids who grew up in Life with Louis in the 90s are now, you know, millennials, you know, they're coming.
they're coming to the shows.
They're coming to the shows. And then there's a whole new group who are coming, these families that have become addicted to Baskets.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the character I play is very Minnesotan, very Midwestern, but really Minnesotan, real St. Paul.
Yeah.
East side, passive aggressive, you know.
Well,
if you think box store woman.
Yeah, if you think that's a good idea, then go for it, you know, that kind of a thing.
Well, if that's what you're going to do, you know, I'll, there's no way, it's always a drift off. If you, well, whatever. You know, she's, you know, but she's a fierce mother, and I think you get that too in the Midwest. She's some fierce mother and somebody who cares deeply about the success of her child, no matter how much damage she does.
in spite of herself.
In spite of herself. You know, she's a bull in a china shop, and she breaks very little compared to what she could break.
Yeah.
And I think that that's probably why the character resonates with people, because I think that she's got a whole layer underneath it, and they're waiting for it to be revealed. And, you know, luckily I'm with such creative people, Louis C.K. and Jonathan Kreisel and Zach Galifianakis, that, and FX, which is a great network, you know, give me so much freedom. And we're in the writer's room right now for the third season. So we're just trying to make it greater than it was last season. So first season, we tried to make second season better, and now third season. So we feel blessed that, I feel so great that we got a third season.
And, you know, Mom in the show is based on Aura Zeller Anderson. Did I say that right?
Zella
is your mother.
We had a Zeller, but we hated going down there. Fuzzy Zeller, wasn't it?
Right, exactly.
So, that's who it is. And my five sisters, of course, I don't know how I could just do my mom.
Yeah.
I'd probably do my five sisters and every other Midwestern passive-aggressive mother I came in contact with.
But the interesting choice, and Conan noted this when you were on Conan a few months ago, when you got the job, you got the role, you said, no, I'm going to do this, and my mother's spirit will be in the character, but I'm not going to have a mother's voice. I will be motherly, but I'm not going to try to sound like a woman. I'm not going to try to do the sing-songy thing.
Yeah, I'm not going to I'm not going to change my voice, basically, is what I went to the director, Jonathan Kreisel, and I said, hey, just before we shot the scene for the pilot, which it was just one scene.
Yeah.
I said, I'm not going to change my voice. He goes, yeah, that's a good idea. You know, it's a real chill set. It really is. Like, you go, oh, are we shooting? Oh, okay. I didn't know. I mean, it's really that good. And I've never heard him say, hey, that was, you know, bad, or that was lesson. It's always, hey, let's try another one. That's all it is. And we're all with it. And as many as it takes, it seems to be paying off.
Is it 100% scripted, or do you ad-lib and improv?
Well, I mean, there's a 100% scripted thing, but then, you know, comics, we can't help ourselves.
You
so
and Zach,
I try
sure.
to make Zach and Martha laugh, and the I try to make the, you know, the director cry, because that means, you know, if you can make the director cry, I can move him. A laugh would do one thing, but if I can make him cry, then I own him. No. No, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I'm trying to make Louis Anderson, the comedian and an actor, disappear completely in that part.
I don't remember what episode it was, but I watched one where someone said something and you did a spit take, and I could have sworn it was a blooper.
It was a blooper.
But it stayed.
Well, it wasn't a blooper.
Because you kept going with the, you corrected yourself.
Yeah.
You're like, oh my, that was refreshing.
I think I said that was refreshing, or that hit the spot
that
or something.
That hit the spot.
It was, you know, because I was going to down the whole thing, but, you know, when you get older, you think you can do something,
That's
but
right.
you can't.
That's right. It's you and Zach. You're both drinking. You're chugging from this. You have a water, lemonade or something, and he's got a water bottle. You're both chugging. It's like a staring contest.
I'm chugging a Kirkland product, you know, from Costco. And I couldn't do it. And I spit it out, and I said, I'm not going to lose this take. It's too good. I said, ooh. That hit the spot. And then Zach, if you look at him right there, he's howling into the cup he's drinking from. He's got like a Arby's cup or something. He's howling in there.
Well, that's part of the acting, I guess, is to not lose a good take like that. As we talk to Louis Anderson here, he's going to be in town. He is in town. He has four shows this weekend.
Three.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
The Turtles in Shakopee. Oh, I counted that wrong. You have Friday and Saturday there at Maple Grove.
Yeah, one show a night.
One show a night. You're one show a night. This show is, that comedy is so dark, Louis.
What show I'm on?
The show you're on with Bass.
Or Real? Is that it?
That's
is
where
it
I
Real
wanted,
or is it dark?
That's what I wanted to go with.
The
conversation.
You know what the director calls it? A slapstick drama.
I feel like it's
accurate.
I feel like there are moments in the show where you're more interested in being real than funny.
Huh. Is that so?
I don't know what you think.
I mean, it's so hard. Yeah, I'm always going for the most authentic thing in the scene. So there's a wonderful scene in the bank. Do you remember it?
Mm-hmm.
Where I break down?
Yeah.
Because my mom, I'm an orphan now, and my mom died and the whole thing.
Yeah.
And so I had to play that completely serious and emotionally, but come out of it laughing. I don't know if you know that. It was a very hard take to figure out.
Yeah.
And so we just did it, and we only got it once. I couldn't recreate the emotion again to that degree because it was coming from someplace I didn't know. And so that just poured out, and then I just said, I got to save this. And I just started laughing in that cry laugh voice thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I don't know. I just go with my instincts.
Yeah.
I try to forget the camera's there.
Well, you know,
I think of myself in the kitchen,
yeah,
or wherever my mom and dad or where we all were. I just think of it there and what my mom might have been going through.
I guess there are so many scenes where you just let it happen. I guess that's where I'm going with it, because
that's the director. He's so good.
But you could also, like, there are moments that are real where you could do a Will Ferrell kind of treatment where you say, well, you're a stupid head kind of a thing, and try to funny up the scene.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not happening. And what I'm really thinking of is the Easter brunch scene.
Oh, that's a good one.
In the first season, you go out for Easter brunch.
That.
Your mom is there. And you go for dessert. And you come back, and you've gotten seated at this table with strangers. And your mom is going on about how much you eat.
Mm-hmm.
And so she used to be a contender for the top cheerleading spot, but she kept eating too much. And in that moment, there was so much pain in your eye, you just walked away. You know, I think there's some comedians or some looser shows that might have tried to throw it back at mom with a one-liner, but you didn't. You just walked away.
Yeah, I just thought that would cheapen it.
Yeah.
You know, I think we're trying to do... I have to go by Jonathan because he's the director, you know, and he's really directing us. I think he's, I think he's trying to do something really new. And I'm just riding along. Because I don't know exactly what he wants. But I know it when he says that we got it, then I'm happy. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I guess I think, you know, Zach is not the guy who'll throw out the usual punchline either.
No.
So I think we're all trying to do the same exact thing, mimic a real life.
But I was waiting for Zach to do some between two ferns kind of stuff.
Uh-huh.
You know, but he didn't.
No.
He doesn't do that here. And he so could at some of these.
You know, he plays the hardest part in the whole show. The least, the character is not that nice.
Chip.
Yeah. Chip. 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 One of my favorite. Sometimes I'll just do that. No matter where I am.
Just
the airport. Chip.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Zach is never going to do that, I don't think, in that situation. You know, contrary to belief, you know, Zach and Louie and all those guys, they spend a tremendous amount of time. You know, like they, in the writer's room, it's a really unique situation. There's a big board, and I guess I haven't been in a lot of TV show writer's rooms. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be there Monday, and I'm looking forward to it. And what I do is there's a big board. And all the episodes are on there at different levels that they're at. And I just listen. And these people throw stuff out. And if anything seems like I could add to it, is something, you know, if I could say, hey, my mom picked, we tried canning pickles once and it became a big mess. Mm-hmm. That could be a really driving scene that's completely authentic. Or the garage sale scene came from me talking about flea markets and garage sales and my mom, you know. And it turned out to be a beautiful episode.
Yeah.
And, you know, Christina's trying to make everybody feel better and not feel so bad herself.
Even though she doesn't know how to say it sometimes. She says the wrong thing.
I know. She's terrible.
She's terrible.
Well, don't people always say the wrong thing?
Yeah.
Like people will come up to me and say, hey, I haven't seen you lately. Are you still working? And I don't think it sounds bad to them.
Yeah.
But I have to really watch myself and not get furious. I don't want to turn into my dad. What? What are you trying to say? Say I'm not working? Damn you. So I think in show business and I think in life, you cannot take everything personal. Hmm. That's the hardest thing, don't you think? If you're a sensitive person, and I'm a big sensitive person.
You have really thin skin.
Well, I think it's thick enough to hold all this in, so that's pretty good. But no, I have thin skin.
Yeah.
But I think everybody has thin skin, or some people maybe. I don't know. I quit trying to read people. I just try to see if they'll give me a ride somewhere. That's what I'm interested in now.
You know, in that Easter brunch, I'm going to go back to the Easter brunch show for just a minute. Because the next scene you go and you find Zach in the casino, because he can't miss your brunch at Easter at the casino, of course. And you sit down in the slot machine next to him and say, "My mother just shamed me out of dessert."
Right.
That's so
beautiful.
It's raw. And it's you speak a lot on stage and in interviews about your own personal struggles. And I just feel like that scene was either liberating to shoot or like horribly demoralizing to shoot. Maybe not. I don't know. I don't, you know what
both,
I mean?
But just, yeah. Both? Is it possible it was both? Yeah. It was liberating in the sense that of how directly I dealt with it with him. That was a chance for me to say to Zach, or to the Chip character, I'm in there with you. You know, this is where my mom did it to me, too. So it was a chance for us to see eye to eye. It really was a really eye to eye. It's where I think the whole show started.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
That's where the show took off.
I agree.
I think that was the thing where people were watching and go, I want to see more about from this family. Mm-hmm. You know? She's just trying to take care of her kids and trying to do the best job she can. And then in the middle of it, she decides she should have a life. And so she's trying to have a life right now, too.
Yeah.
And but at the end of the day, like at the end of the second season, I don't want to spoil it for people. So if you're worried about spoiling, yeah. but I'm going to talk about the end of the second season, which already aired and is probably on Hulu right now, mm-hmm. or you know iTunes or whatever. But I bought the rodeo instead of the Arby's franchise,
right?
And I did it because I'm trying to. What am I doing? Am I trying to save Chip? I'm trying to save the whole family. Am I trying to save myself? Mm-hmm. Or am I just making another decision, moving through life, and hope it works out? What am I doing? And that's the thing that I think people are doing a lot.
Yeah.
You know, like people go, well, why would you want to buy the rodeo? Well, I don't know. I just... It seemed like the right thing to do at the time. Don't you think that's why people do things?
Yeah.
It seemed like the right thing to do
at the time. It doesn't mean it fit into a 5-year plan.
No, you know, this is what this show is all about. Nobody has written down, and maybe Jonathan has, but he hasn't told us, what the end deal is. Mm. Most shows, you know, are already have a Bible.
Yeah.
That where they've made up the 5 seasons or whatever. We do not.
Hmm.
We do not have. We have a joke book. And but, no, you know, I think we all have a – I think I don't have an end result because I think the possibilities for Christina and the family are endless. And I think that they'll continue to grow. And I think when you're with all these really talented people and these great writers, man,
yeah,
how lucky am I? I mean, I just – you know, when I took the job, I said 2 things. Louis, you're not going to complain once, you know, mm-hmm. and you're not going to say no to anything. And that was the best advice I gave myself.
Louis Anderson with me. We're talking about the TV show he's on, Baskets, for which he won an Emmy last year, which you can see on FX. They just renewed it for a 3rd season, and as I noted, they're writing it right now. Yay! He's going to do it.
That's what you say inside, you know.
Yay! 3rd season. There's a show on the stand-up side of his life, Thursday at Turtles in Shakopee, Friday and Saturday at the Maple Grove Tavern. You joke a lot about your family. You joke a lot about yourself as well. Do you remember the first joke you said on your first Tonight Show appearance?
Yeah, I can't stay long in between meals. Such a good joke.
It is a good joke.
Well, you know, because when you're a fat person or you're a tall person or you're an ugly person, let's say that people think those 3 things, one of those 3 things. Well, if I come out and I don't mention the thing about being fat, people will assume I'm not sure I think they'll sit out there and go, do you think he knows he's that big? I've always thought that about people. Hmm. I've always thought that you should get it out of the way. Like, it's better that I control the information on me being fat than you control it. Same with the ugly, same with the tall. So if I could steer the train and then we could get off that track and get into other things that I want to talk about.
Drew Carey's first joke on The Tonight Show was, yes, I really look like this.
Yeah, same thing.
But most of that set on The Tonight Show was about your weight. You didn't get it out of the way.
I go right into my dad's stuff, though?
Yeah, but it came back to your weight a lot, too. Your dad was in there. He was with the gun and things like that.
I don't know what you're trying to say, Tom.
I'm trying to ask.
I mean, Tom. I'm
someone who's had body image problems myself, and I can't. I'm just trying to get
You look terrific, Tom.
Thank you. So do you. But do you see when you're up there making jokes, are you in some way an ambassador in the struggle on body image? Do you think about it that deeply? I guess that I'm trying to get radio on you here
No, I don't mind. Here's what I think. What's funny? And when you're really fat, there's a lot of struggles, you know? And if you look in the mirror and you see a circus mirror image, or if you see in whatever you look at and see, that's who you think you are, or that. But also, for a fat person, they're representing what they're hearing or feeling from people out there. That's what I think. Like, I'm doing those jokes, one for a laugh, because I know they are, and they build, you know, I'm building currency with the audience, you know, because if I am this open about myself, Tom, then this is the same exact thing I do with Christine, hopefully.
Yeah.
I'm wide open up there. So Richard Pryor was the greatest at being wide open on stage. Like, you just felt like you could see every single part of him inside and out. And so the more transparent I am up there, the better it is. But if you were to measure out how many jokes were fat jokes or how many jokes were family jokes, I think that would be a really good thing to do. And I bet you the family stuff and all the other stuff, the dad stuff and the mom stuff and all that is way ahead of the fat jokes. But I do think that people remember the easiest jokes.
Sure.
And they buy you as a fat character then. You know, it's happened to a lot of actors. You know, they get thin and they have a hard time getting a job. You know, I saw it with what's his name? You know, who was so popular there with, Moneyball.
And Jonah Hill.
Jonah Hill. I saw it with him. He went, remember when he lost all that weight?
Yeah.
You see him in many movies. Hmm. And then he put some weight back on. Because, you know.
Hollywood's cruel, man.
Yeah. Well, no, people are just used to seeing you a certain way. Like when you go to see, who's your favorite singing artist?
Oh, God, that's going to.
Just one person.
I saw. Okay, let's just go for it. I like Billy Joel.
Yeah. So you want him to play piano, man,
of course.
Right? Okay. So you are limiting Billy Joel to Piano Man. So
he's got to do it.
He's got to do it. If he doesn't do it, you don't really care about his new album. If it doesn't have another hit like that on it, you don't care to listen to it, do you?
No.
Right.
I'm going to get a lot of Dr. Phil on Twitter here for outing myself as a Billy Joel fan.
No, but it's just like when, you know, as soon as they play the hit song, you go, let's get out of here. I don't want to hear their new album. But I don't mean it in a cruel way towards the artist. You fall in love with things about artists, right? That's what you do. You fall in love with things about artists, what they mean to you, where you were doing, what you were doing. So people have decided that I'm a fat person, and then I change my persona. Oh, I don't want to listen to him anymore. That can happen. Then also, if people might watch Christine's show and say, that's too sad. I just like what Louis does, the funny stuff. Mm. You know, but, you know, I'm just trying to go on a journey here.
Sure.
I just want to go on this one. Look, at 64, I got a wonderful job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a really good, it's a part of a lifetime.
Yeah.
Easily. Because, you know, I mean, this has some kind of spiritual connection.
The show?
TV
show?
I mean, why would Louis and Zach call me and ask me to play the mom? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just figure my mom's meddling up in heaven or wherever she is. She could be at Costco in the sky. and I just feel like I just feel like sometimes there's a connection there. Like, what would be, you know, they wanted a British woman who wasn't available. And then my name came up because it was a voice that
it was in Zach's head.
He made a sound and Louis thought it sounded like me. He goes, you mean like Louis Anderson? What is the odds of that?
Yeah.
What kind of a
world is that?
That's how.
Or to have had Helen Mirren be the mom.
Yeah.
Or something.
Do you know
like
what
that.
I mean, though?
Yeah, I
and
do.
So what can I say except that I feel responsible for doing the best job representing not just my mom, but, you know, me, Minnesota, you know, my hometown and all that stuff. Because that's who this character is. That character is right out of St. Paul, Minnesota, going to the gem store. You probably don't remember what the gem store was.
No, I don't.
It was for servicemen. It was like the first big box store over there on 61, where Menards is now.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, my mom loved the box store. She loved the 88-cent store before the 99-cent store came in. My mom loved Jerry's Chicken. We love all those things, and I try to bring every single one of those things that I can from the east side of St. Paul right into Hollywood.
And when you won the Emmy, you got up on stage and said, Mom, we did it. I thought that was lovely. And then you read the names of all your siblings, which takes longer
than you think.
But you know what? You also named Abraham, is it Geissness?
Yeah.
You said in your Emmy acceptance speech, thank you to Abraham for loving and believing in me, even when I couldn't love and believe in myself.
You know, that was a guy. He's a person who's been through a lot of stuff in his life.
He's a producer. So,
yeah, yeah, producer and writer, artist. And we produced a lot of stuff together. And he, you know, people forget how vulnerable you are as an artist. Like, just, you know, that whole thing, you saying, I mostly did fat jokes.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you, about the body image and then all that stuff. So you need people who believe in you and can help you get to a place. You know, I come from a really, my dad was a really rough character, you know, with his drinking, alcoholic and abusive and monstrous and talented. And I was named after him and all that stuff. And so you need people in life who'll be honest with you. And Abraham's one of those people who's been honest with me, and we're working on a new project right now, animated project that we're really excited about. So,
I don't know how much you care to share about it, but was he instrumental in a moment of you couldn't get off the couch because you were depressed, or was it that you didn't believe you could get the next gig? I mean, how was it that
all of those kind of things, you know, yeah. Because, you know, I just said, hey, I got to get going. You need somebody to go, hey, you got to get going. You're really talented. Mm-hmm. Look how much you've done. You know, because in Hollywood, you know, you get forgotten. You know, people didn't talk to me for 15 years and I put a dress on and everyone wants to talk to me. It's really a true statement. Every single person wanted to talk to me.
Yeah. Not even during the Family Feud, they didn't want to talk to you?
Well, that was, yeah, they a different way, though.
Yeah.
You know, people who like the Family Feud, I'm not sure, like Baskets.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, that's
people
true.
Who like Life with Louie, I'm not sure that they're ready for me to be the mom. But although they do enjoy it, a lot of Life with Louie people enjoy Baskets also.
And they'll be in the audience here, too, yeah, when you're in town. I'd like to ask, as we end up here, Louie, because this seemed to be such an important moment in your life, and it's unfortunately, it's sad, but your brother Tommy died 2 years ago. And he was the only sibling of yours younger than you. And I'm just wondering how you're doing. It just seemed to hurt you so much in that moment.
Still.
Yeah.
Yesterday was his birthday.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah. I'm sorry.
That's all right. I miss all my brothers and sisters, you know. Kent, Roger, Rhea, Mary, Sheila, Tommy. Billy, I miss 7 of my siblings. They're all gone. But with Tommy, he's a baby.
Yeah.
Tough one. Love you, Tom.
He was very unexpected, too.
Yeah. So what changed for me there was make sure you live. Make sure you live your life. He loved this character. Mm-hmm. He loved the idea of it. He never got to see, the success of it. But he knew it was great. And, you know, we were buddies.
Yeah. Closest in age, too, right?
Yeah.
So there we are. You know, you do so many jokes about your family and you ride them hard. And, you know, we see Christine in the show and there are moments of mocking what your mom did. But I don't know. I don't know that the stand-up comedy you're going to do this weekend, that the audience necessarily knows that this is where it's coming from, what we just had here, this moment.
I think audiences know everything.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then nothing. But mostly, I think audiences, especially in Minnesota, are really special. I'm just blowing my nose for all the noise in here.
All right. Well, we can turn off the mic there for a moment.
That's all right. You know, people should hear the real thing going on. I think audiences in Minnesota are most sophisticated. That's why I'm back here. You know, I want to work on this new material for a new special that I hope to shoot early next year. So I want it to be great. I have a lot to compete with for my other specials, and I just want it to be as great as my first special, my second special.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's easier to make the first special, harder to make the second, but I feel like the first, second, and third of my specials were great, and I feel like this special is going to be great also. I think there's going to be something great in it. I always try to put a nugget in there, something that matters. You I'm very Minnesotan, you know.
I see that.
I put the pea in the dressing or the raisin in the dressing. Whoever gets it has to do the dishes. That kind of weird stuff. So I try to put a little raisin in the special so that when you go home at night, you go, oh, hey, when Louis said that one thing about, that reminded me of, blah, that's what I want.
Yeah. You did a special back in the 80s for Showtime at the Guthrie.
Mm.
Two of them. You're going to shoot the next one here in Minnesota?
I don't know. It seems like a really good idea, doesn't it?
Yeah.
If some people sponsor it, then I'll shoot it here. You know, it's all about sponsorship nowadays, isn't it? Nestle's Crunch, or better yet, Kirkland products, you know, or Arby's presents the new Slim Down Louie Burger.
Well, did you see the Mariucci Arena just got 3M's name put on it, and it's going to be called the 3M Arena at Mariucci.
Oh, that's so fantastic.
So we could do something, the 3M comedy show at Louis Anderson or something like that.
You know, the greatest thing about Minnesota is that people are really cheering for you. I mean, there's a few who want to see you fail, but for mostly, they're such supportive audiences. You know, lots of comedians come here just to do their shows here and their specials here. This is a very, very important place for comedy.
Well, take note of that, Minnesota. And Louis Anderson, best of luck to you. Good luck on the third season.
Thank you. I'll be in Wisconsin, by the way, the 23rd, 24th, 25th, 24th. Yeah, something like that.
Look him up.
Look it up.
Shakopee on Thursday.
Yeah, Shakopee and Maple Tavern.
Maple Grove. Maple Grove Tavern. Louis Anderson, thanks so much.